closer.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host for today. I'll also be your host next Tuesday and the following Friday from 2 to 3. I think, is that right? I don't know. My schedule's on my ear, so it's hard for me to tell what's going on. How are you, man? It's good to be back on the podcast. I've been missing you like crazy. Okay, before we go much further, and we're going to go much further, if you haven't thought about or are not signed up yet for the Berlin workshop, get on it because it is going to be a smasher. I mean, wow, man, it's going to be big fun. You can always do that by contacting me, officetoddconklin@gmail.com. Enough of that stuff. Let's talk about today's podcast, shall we? Yes, we shall, because today's podcast is kind of interesting. I want to start by reading an email I got. So I get a lot of emails, which is, you know, good because I don't answer them all. I like to think of myself as easy to talk to but hard to connect with. Does that make sense? No, did that come out right? Hard to get but easy to chat. Now, I don't know what to – anyway, I got an email, and I just want to – as crazy as it sounds, I'm going to read it to you because I get a lot of these. And this one's on some of the things I've been talking about. So, you know, the video came out with the ASSE meeting and the Scott Geller, Todd Conklin discussion between BBS and kind of Safety Differently, the new view. And then out of that rolled all this discussion around fatalities and serious events. Because, you know, I don't know if you follow along very much or not, but I have a kind of a countervailing opinion on fatality prevention. I actually, to be really honest with you, and we're friends, we can be honest, I really think the crap that's being sold is not good for us. Because what's being sold out there is do the same stuff harder, you know, try harder, care more, always be careful, never be dead. And I'm just not sure that's the way to – I don't think it works. I mean, I think we've been doing that pretty effectively, and it's not enough. It's good. It's just not sufficient. So it's necessary. It's not sufficient if you think about it kind of in the systems view, like we tend to do. Anyway, the Workplace Fatalities book is kind of on that. And so I get all these emails, and this is one I have, and I'll protect the writer of the email, you know, so that you don't troll that writer, him or her. I can't tell you what gender it is, but you don't troll them with weird trolls, but because there are a lot of weird people that follow on the internet as well. But that's also a topic for another podcast. Here's the letter. If I'm reading this right, ellipse, which is dot, 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 some people are now saying that Todd is all about controls now. But I think that is only right in part. If I'm reading the book right, you're trying to draw a distinction between controls for prevention and controls for execution, and controls intended to anticipate failure and allow those failures to be safe. And he says he tends to usually call that a defense generally. Oil and gas calls them safeguards. The language for it's kind of imprecise. And the writer, the non-gender specific, he says that. In the latter is the new message, especially for work resource planning for the failures. Prevention is not bad, but prevention is always an incomplete answer. Until we look at the hazard our people tell us can be terminal and apply fail-safe defenses around those hazards, we are in the proverbial half glass and wondering why fatalities and serious events still continue. I take this into how we apply like a strength of safeguards matrix or a strength of defense matrix as well. Our processes are asking if prevention and execution defenses are present and working. They are not asking if we have functional safe landing defenses that are working as well. And then the writer goes on to say, I plan to talk to our management about this. And I plan to talk to the event analysis people about this. I think this is a key opportunity. Now, I don't know how much sense that makes. I mean, I read it as good as I could, I think. But But I think that's a really interesting part of the struggle. And you see that struggle starting to at least emerge in that videotape with Scott Geller and myself and the rest of the gang, that this notion of systems, if you think about this philosophically, and I guess we might as well just admit to it that it's kind of a philosophical, not a philosophical discussion like we're talking about theory, but really a discussion around philosophy. And we're really talking about, to a great extent, this notion of necessary and sufficient. So if you've been in process safety, or if you come out of like my world, you know a lot about necessary and sufficient. Necessary is really valuable. Sufficient is really that additional way to look at it. And it's really a term that comes from philosophy. It's kind of almost a rationalist approach to understanding how the world exists. And that, I think, is really valuable. But the language we use to talk about these safeguards, these barriers, these controls, these defenses, and all those words are pretty interchangeable, and they're all relatively accurate, depending on sort of what world you come from. Those really exist on both sides of the work execution. And that's kind of what this email writer was snapping to. It was sort of a moment of inspiration, a moment of clarity maybe around what I was talking about. And I think that speaks greatly for the email writer and not greatly for me, because this is a real struggle. I'm really struggling with what to call these things and how to talk about them. Because as soon as I say prevention is not enough, I think what people hear is that our prevention exercises have been bad and not valuable. And that's not what I'm saying at all. I mean, prevention isn't bad. Prevention's vital. And it's done a lot of heavy lifting in our business, really worldwide. The question becomes, is prevention alone sufficient? So prevention is necessary, but is it sufficient? And that's where this gets really, what's the word? It gets really, in my mind, I guess it's a philosophical jump. It doesn't get complicated or complex. It just becomes more of a study really in sort of rational philosophy and less of a study in work management. And yet they're the same thing. That really what we're dealing with is the opportunity in a great extent for really our industry to add another way to think about this notion of fatalities and catastrophic failures. And it's a way that really aligns more with our friends and neighbors in high reliability. So DevOps, computing systems, David Woods and his gang with resilience engineering, those ideas start to come together. Where once I really think the high reliability thinkers and the safety differently thinkers believe they were on kind of different sides of a discussion. They were in different, one was in Asia and one was in Europe. You know, they were in different places. I think what's coming is this great confluence of how we manage these ideas of controls. We absolutely have to have prevention controls. They're vital for what we do. We absolutely have to have work execution tools and controls, because that's where the worker actually touches the work. That's where the complex adaptive behavior, the problem solving, the completion of the process, the completion of the design, all those things happen in real time, you know, in order to create some kind of successful production value or some kind of process efficiency. And then we have all the side of the house that says, when the failure happens, are we ready to manage that failure? And I don't think this is a big stretch. I mean, in your house, depending on where you live, but in your house, there's a breaker box someplace. And that breaker box is there to do one thing. If you overload a circuit, if you straight short a circuit in the bathroom, right, the breaker goes off at the power in order to really protect the house from burning down. So we've got all the prevention, the GFCI that's in your bathroom, the ground fault interrupt that's in your GFIC, whatever, the ground fault interrupt that's in your bathroom That's really valuable. We've got all the code and the inspections when they wired your house, unless your house is as old as mine, and then that's really a different discussion, right? Then you've got the actual execution of the work. I'm not going to plug in something that has a bad cord, or I'm going to be careful when I plug it in. It's relatively hard to plug something in wrong. We've really looked at the human factors and system design on that, and so we've got the execution of plugging something in. But if something fails, we can really count on, and to a great extent do count on, the fact that the breaker will trigger, and that will provide sort of an immediate solution to consequence. It doesn't mean you won't die, but it does mean it's harder to die than it would be if there weren't the breaker on that system. And that's really the discussion we're having. And the email that I got, and I get a bunch of these because that book is, it's definitely having some impact, at least in the way we think. And I'm not saying the book Workplace Fatalities is the best seminal work of safety ever written in the history of meds. No, that was not the intention. If that happened, I'm freaked out. It's really just a way to say, have we looked at this problem correctly? And really, for you guys, the question I would posit to you, because you're really sort of at the place where the worker meets the work, is what systems can we count on most? In fact, what systems, in your opinion, in the work you do at your site, are the best? And my guess is the answer you're going to give me are the systems that have the best ability to prevent, the best controls when we execute work, and then the best fail safes when that work fails. And I could be wrong. Oh, yes, I could be. But I don't think I am. And I see where it runs counter, and I see where the people who troll it pretty hard. And I could see where it makes people angry who have a vested dog in the fight, you know, who want to write a book that talks about, you know, fatalities are a function of bad critical choices. And if workers and leaders made better choices, we'd have less fatalities. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's right, and I get it, but that's what's new there. I mean, right, if we're going to say this is a failure of a worker or a failure of a person, then we're not going to impact our ability to reduce those failures. And it's never more true than around the notion of caring. Because the idea that a worker can care more, that's a really interesting idea, which kind of leads me to the second email. So the second email I get, because I just have a couple, I told you this was coming. The second email asked me a question. So this gentleman in this case is working for a company, and he came in and they had a program called Commit to Safety. And what that program entailed, and this is loosely translated from what I got from the email, was that every worker in the entire company was to publicly avow, sign a commitment in front of his peers that says he will be safe. And even more importantly in this commitment, he will be safe and I will not violate the company policies. And then you sign it. And the idea for this program was that it re-emphasized and engaged that emotional commitment to safety, and that was exactly what this company needed to take them over the top and get them to a point where, in fact, that would dramatically improve their fatalities and serious events. That the problem was, at least as I see it, if I can translate this for you, is that the employees were not committed to not dying. And so therefore, by publicly committing in front of their peers, taking a vow of commitment in front of their peers to not do dangerous things and to not violate policies, they would in fact improve. I'm giving you a little silence to think about that. And the question I got in this email is, that doesn't feel right to me. Will this help? End. And I said, yeah, I mean, thanks for writing. The reason it doesn't feel right is because it isn't right. And that this program assumes ultimately the problem, the reason why people are dying in the workplace is they're not committed to not dying. And there's just not enough empirical evidence behind that. That's not science. That's just it's a gut level moral judgment on those people that said if they cared more, they would not die. And what's interesting to me is you're seeing this kind of conversation. It's existed forever, so it's not new, but you're seeing this conversation kind of come back into the narrative. The opioid crisis in the United States, you can really start to see two views to that. I mean, you can see the traditional view, which is if people cared more and were more morally strong, they would not get addicted to drugs, right? That's one viewpoint. And so therefore the problem is that in order to stop opioid addiction, we have to tell people to care more and respond with a stronger moral foundation. Or the other view is that opioid addiction is a disease and that actually blaming the victim probably won't make it better because it's not a moral failing. It's really, it's a disease. And that the way you'll fix this problem is probably by some kind of larger systemic fix. You make it more difficult to actually get opioid drugs, or you somehow look at the people who have the addiction, not as the problem, but really as in this case, they're an output of the problem, and that the problem will be solved well before you get into that system. And it's just an interesting way to see that dichotomy. Whether it's around fatalities or safety or rule following or procedural adherence or opioids, to see that dichotomy kind of come true. And this is part of what we struggle with. That's why when I talk about it being a philosophical discussion, it really is a differing philosophy. It's philosophically a different way to see the problem. And it's always going to be about sort of creating the problem. It's creating the problem statement. It's vital that we spend the time crafting the right research question so that then our research actually gets us to a place where we advance the way we think. And that's our challenge. It's going to be our challenge. I mean, that's a huge part of how we think about how we move forward, how we do what we do. And that, I think, that's what's interesting. And the confluence, the convergence of kind of the traditional view, the current view, the normal view, and the different view, that's really a great opportunity for us to learn. And it really is kind of a mission for us to a great extent. But remember, this mission has warriors, and sometimes we have fatalities and damages. And not workplace fatalities and workplace damages, but people are out there getting fired and disciplined because they're standing up to their bosses saying, you know, blaming this person doesn't make us smarter. And the bosses say, well, then you can't work here anymore, because this is how I'm going to manage the ship, and if you don't like it, find someplace else to be. And that's a part of our dialogue as well. It's funny because the stakes here are really high. And you know, I goof on stuff and kind of have as much fun as I possibly can, you know, on the podcast, and I certainly goof on stuff when I'm out in the world, but the stakes are high. I mean, they're really high because we're talking about really saving people's lives and creating opportunities for people to have full, complete careers and histories and stories. And that work is vital. It's what we do, and it's how we make the world a better place. So let's go back to the first letter. Is Todd all about controls? Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm certainly more interested in our ability for processes to fail safely than I ever have been before. And I realize, and I don't know if you realize this, but I realize that high-risk work that has really good fail-safes is pretty stable work and not very scary. It's the high-risk work without the fail-safes that scares me to death. So we think about sort of the crazy idea that the things that hurt people, the things that we spend our time and love and effort in industrial safety, are not the same things that kill people. And so the idea that we can predictively manage, we can get better at prediction, that we can come up with some kind of algorithm and predict, I'm not sure that's the case. In fact, I think the problem here is that we're good at preventing, but we're not good at predicting. And so all the things that exist as prevention are necessary and vital. All the things that make safety happen in work execution, that's what really our workers bring to the table. That's the real-time detection and correction that happens every single day in your plant. And then all the fail-safes that we build into our systems, our guards and barriers and controls and safe landing zones, all of those things, I think, kind of at least make the picture more complete. They add more sufficiency to the argument. I'm not sure it's the end-all be-all. I mean, I would be the first to tell you that I'm not sure the answers that we give are complete enough. But what they do is cause us to think differently about the problem statement, which gives us a different way to think about the answer. And that's the challenge. So if you haven't read Workplace Fatalities, maybe you should, so you can write me some emails and tell me what you think as well. You might see what you can do with your organization around thinking about these ideas. And I would really encourage you to, if you haven't done it, pull out the high reliability stuff, Carl Weick and Dave Woods and all those guys, and look what they say about this notion of reliability and sustainability, and couple it with the work you see from Eric Hallnagel and Decker and me and all those people that are out there talking about kind of this new view. Because in many ways, I think that is, to a great extent, where we are moving. And so do all these emails from people I don't know far away who spend a lot of time and energy thinking about writing me these stories and telling me what happens. The great news is the good emails, we saved a life, we had an amazing near miss, you know, those emails, those come as well. And I think that encourages us to continue to do what we do as long and as carefully and as much as we possibly can do it, because that's really key to how we think about the world as well. So that's pretty much what I wanted to talk about. I promised you a longer discussion on this, and here it is. I mean, we're in a place now where it's kind of up to how we think about it and how we manage it and see if we can make the world even that much better. That's really the key. We can't count on luck. We can't bend luck enough to make it work to our favor. So if we can't count on luck, then we have to count on our capacity to fail and fail safely as much as we can, which is coupled directly to our ability to prevent and to manage execution of work as carefully and as stably as we possibly can. So that is the podcast for today. What did you think? I'm always curious what you're thinking. Stay tuned, because there's so many amazing podcasts on there. It's pretty darn exciting how many people have expressed interest, and there's a kind of a request going out now for a new debate podcast, which I think is a great idea, when we bring a couple opposing voices on and see how they kind of hang out with each other when we talk about it. I think that would be great fun as well. So it's going to be all good. That's for sure. That is for sure. So that's it. I hope you're getting what you need, because that is really important. It's kind of, we're closing in on the end of the year. It's almost time for a new year to come. I can't even believe I'm saying that. Until then, learn something new every single day. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.